I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a judge known for taking it easy on violent criminals now says she's the victim. Plus, we walk you through the path to avoiding a dangerous Democratic supermajority and who exactly advised cities to take a stance on the initiative opposing the Climate Commitment Act. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We have a ton to get to today. But first, if you missed out on one of the events we had this past weekend in Bothell or in Marysville, going door to door, sign waving for Dave Reichert and the Let's Go Washington initiatives, we're going to have two more. And it comes at a critical time because ballots are going to be coming out this week. So we're going to be door knocking, sign waving in Federal Way this Saturday, October 19th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then a week from then, we're going to be in Steilacoom, October 26th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. early morning. Wake up call. Did you even know about that, Nicole? 9 a.m.?
Sheesh.
You can be there late if you want. It's okay. You know, not all of us are early risers, myself included. But we had a hell of a good time. And so we would love for you to join us and, you know, feel like regardless of the outcome, we put everything we could into trying to save this state that we all love so dearly. So you are invited. We would love to have you there and no need to stay the entire time. All right. Early this morning, I published a story on Patreon and Locals diving into really a key issue that we've touched on the show, but maybe not the depth that we ought to have before the ballots come out. The headline, 7 must-win seats to stop a dangerous Democratic supermajority. This is what we all should be fearful of, regardless of political affiliation. Like, look, if you're a left-wing ideologue, fine. You probably love the idea of your party being in control of absolutely everything, no checks and balances. But for those of us who know what this means, it's terrifying. Because as I point out in the article, those pesky citizen initiatives that Democrats are so annoyed by, consider that to be one of the first things they try to go after if they get supermajorities. So right now, the Democratic Party in Washington State, of course, they've had the governor's mansion for 40 years, but they have pretty solid majorities in both the House and the Senate. Now, whether they can reach supermajorities in both, that's not going to happen for both chambers this year. The House, maybe 2026. Let's hope that people wake up by then. But the Senate could become a supermajority for Democrats in November if some key races do not go well for the Republican Party. So really, and I talk about in the article, I lay them all out. I mean, if you're living on Whidbey Island, if you're in the Yakima area, if you're in Vancouver or east of Vancouver, if you're in South Pierce County, you are going to be, I mean, gosh, over on the peninsula in Clallam County, you are in a district that really could decide whether Democrats can work their way toward complete unchecked power in Olympia. And so I really need you to pay close attention to the legislative races on your ballot, particularly for state Senate. And if you have one of these individuals on your ballot, I highly suggest voting for them. You know, even if you don't have a strong, even if, frankly, if you're a Democrat, but you understand the danger of one party rule and you can live with one of these as your state senator, please, you can be the thing that stops Democrats from capturing a supermajority and pushing through crazy policies like rent control, unemployment benefits for striking workers, quote unquote, cleaning up the state constitution, like the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party says that she wants to do if they reach supermajorities. So in the 10th legislative district, Ron Muzal, 14th legislative district. So Ron Muzal is out on Whidbey Island. They also have areas of Skagit County, North Snohomish County. He's the sitting senator there. Curtis King in the 14th legislative district. And so that includes, I want to make sure I get the exact, hold on a second. I want to get the cities on here just so, sorry. Give me one second. Yeah, so Ron Muzal, 10th Legislative District, that's Island Skagit, part of Snohomish County. 14th Legislative District, vote for Curtis King, that's Yakima County, Klickitat, Benton, Franklin counties. Let's see, Legislative District 17. This is going to be basically east of Vancouver. So part of Clark County, but more rural Clark County, Skamania County, et cetera. And then some blue seats. They're currently blue, but Republicans could flip them in close races to help avoid a supermajority and help Democrats not make sure Democrats don't get four net additional seats. The fifth legislative district, that's East King County. So if you're in like Snoqualmie, North Bend, vote for Chad Magandons in that race. And then if you go all the way out to the 24th legislative district, so this is basically the entire peninsula, Clallam County, Jefferson County, Grays Harbor. I highly recommend voting for Marsha Kelbon in that race to avoid the supermajority situation. She's been on the show before. She's absolutely awesome. And then down in the 28th legislative district, the incumbent down there, this is Faircrest, University Place, Lakewood. The incumbent is Senator Twyna Nobles. But I recommend voting for Maya Espinoza in that race. Again, people right, left, and center, if you understand the danger of giving one party so much control, they can override vetoes, they can clean up the state constitution, they can push through new spending proposals without really any discussion or dissent. If you understand the danger of that, please read the article that I pushed out this morning. There's also a race in the 18th legislative district. I'll say I just don't know enough about the Republican candidate in that race. I haven't been thrilled about the campaign that he ran pre-primary, so I'm not issuing an endorsement. But Brad Benton down in Vancouver in the 18th legislative district, if your sole goal is avoiding a supermajority, that would be a good race for you. So read that article, share it with your friends. If you have friends that live in those areas, people, this is it. This is it. This is when we're going to decide as a state, do we allow the party that has pushed these insane policies on us nonstop for 10 plus years to get power that's so concentrated, no one can stand in their way, not even a governor who might have some sort of epiphany that a policy that was passed ought to be vetoed. We can't let them come after our right to initiative. They're going to do all those things. I mean, they've told you that's what they want to do, right? Listen to them when they warn you what they're going to do. Clean up our state constitution. Give me a break. All right. This story is wild. All the credit in the world to my friend David Rose, my former colleague over at Fox 13, who David's one of those people who, like, he knows the difference between right and wrong. And he's been there so long that, you know, he can't be unduly influenced by editorial decision making. Like, he's going to call balls and strikes on public safety. So he has a show called The Spotlight. And he released this segment on a King County Superior Court judge named Joanna Bender. This is just wild stuff. So Joanna Bender, we've probably talked about some of her decisions. Yeah, we did on this show, because she is so soft on crime. No, in my opinion, no regard for the safety of the public, for what's right and just and fair. This is all about soft on crime. Like, I'm sorry, if you're a young black man coming in front of me, it doesn't matter what you did. Like, I'm going to spring you loose.
Specifically violent crime.
I mean, these are very, very serious crimes. So you've got defendants who come before her. Usually when she makes the news, it's in the arraignment phase where she sets bail. And the bail she sets is often way, way, way too low. So I don't know how much is in the setup here, but you'll recall the story that we're going to talk about, which David Rose frames his story around. So remember, there's the 20-year-old Kashawn Jimerson. So he stabbed that handyman in Renton to death. Like, ran out. There was video of him first bludgeoning him from behind with like a bar or something. So anyway, heaves and peers in front of this judge for second degree murder. Here, I'll let David set it up.
Well, now a murder case that gives a snapshot of what's going on in many courtrooms in our area on a regular basis. Judges setting low bails on dangerous suspects. It happened after a man was accused of stabbing a handyman to death with a butcher knife in Renton. And then a different judge in the same case expressed empathy for the suspect's family, not the victim. The whole thing has many people upset, including the Renton police chief. This is video from the crime scene showing 20-year-old Kashawn Jimerson hitting 65-year-old Michael Gray from behind with a broom handle. The video shows Gray then following him back into the apartment. And that's when detectives say Jimerson pulled out a butcher knife and stabbed Gray in the back, killing him. According to court documents, Jimerson called 911 after the crime and confessed. Judge Michelle Gelson, who you saw there, set his bail at $50,000. And 27 hours after he was taken into custody, he was released without electronic home monitoring. The Renton police chief demanded answers, asking why Judge Gelson granted such a low bail. During Jemerson's court appearance in front of Superior Court Judge Johanna Bender, Jemerson's mom wanted to address the court, asking that the media not show his face in fear of what she called vigilante justice. That's when Judge Bender expressed empathy for Jemerson's family.
Yeah, so we're going to get to a little bit more of that. But again, so the bail issue, it's not just relegated to the one judge that we're going to talk about, this Judge Bender. As David Rose pointed out, it was actually a different judge that let him go on $50,000 bail, which we discussed on the show, which was just insane. So here's the clip again from David Rose, the spotlight on Fox 13, where this King County Superior Court judge, you know, has no problem in the world empathizing with the family and the suspect.
This hearing isn't about me, but I will share with you that I often get death threats based on the decisions that I make, which is equally frustrating to me because I'm trying to do my job, and it should not be the responsibility of any member of the public to threaten my life because I am trying to uphold the law. So I am very empathetic to the situation that the family finds themselves in, having experienced it myself. And I understand personally how very frightening and disrupting it is, all the more so when we're also navigating this incredibly traumatic time in your family. I'm just doing my job. You're dealing with a crisis. That's a huge difference, and one for which I am very empathetic. I will also take this opportunity to editorialize that I hope that the press continues to take seriously their obligation to tell the stories of what happens in our courtroom in a fair and unbiased way, and takes every reasonable editorial action to not stir up public sentiment for revenge.
You guys, in case it wasn't clear, who she's empathizing with there is the family of the 20-year-old who stabbed the handyman to death. That's who. Can you play that? With that in mind, in case it wasn't painfully clear, the mother of Kashawn Jimerson, the 20-year-old who's charged with murder in the second degree, bludgeons this guy from behind. They run inside, stabs him to death with a butcher knife, right? Mom says, hey, you know, I don't want the media to show his face because he could be subject to vigilante justice. Like, woe is him after he murdered someone, right, with a butcher knife. So that's a mom being a mom, right? She's worried about her son. I don't blame her for being worried about her son, although it's a ridiculous request to say, oh, don't show his face. He's being charged with homicide. But after that, that's when this judge, again, Judge Johanna Bender, she's not speaking to the family of the 65-year-old man who was killed and the trauma and the stress that they're going through and what they must be feeling. She's speaking and empathizing with the family of the murder suspect, and in the process, criticizing the media for stirring the pot and making people like her get death threats. Let's listen to that again.
This hearing isn't about me, but I will share with you that I often get death threats based on the decisions that I make, which is equally frustrating to me because I'm trying to do my job, and it should not be the responsibility of any member of the public to threaten my life because I am trying to uphold the law. So I am very empathetic to the situation that the family finds themselves in, having experienced it myself. And I understand personally how very frightening and disrupting it is, all the more so when we're also navigating this incredibly traumatic time in your family. I'm just doing my job. You're dealing with a crisis. That's a huge difference, and one for which I am very empathetic. I will also take this opportunity to editorialize that I hope that the press continues to take seriously their obligation to tell the stories of what happens in our courtroom in a fair and unbiased way, and takes every reasonable editorial action to not stir up public sentiment for revenge.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. That is an activist judge right there. And we've criticized this judge in the past, but what she's using there, so first of all, to hear her... Look, I'm okay. A judge should be fair and impartial. And yeah, it can be traumatic for the family of someone who's accused of a crime, innocent until proven guilty. But the way she sits there at length and waxes poetic about their hardship and their, you know, pain or whatever it is, or crisis, or however she characterized it, and I'm so empathetic with that. Like, while this kid, guy, 20 years old, is accused of murdering someone with a butcher knife, are you as empathetic with the victim and the victim's family? Because you surely aren't expressing that. So how are we supposed to believe that you're going to be fair and impartial? Because it sounds like you're more inclined to empathize with the suspect, with the alleged murderer. Now, but what she's employing here is a very, very typical tactic of the left. I have seen it employed against me in my reporting multiple times. And what it is painting yourself as the victim to try to absolve yourself of reasonable scrutiny. So former members of the Seattle City Council were very, very good at this, where they'd say, oh, I'm getting, you know, death threats emailed to me or whatever it is because of a vote I took or something I said publicly that frankly was worthy of scrutiny. So the media would offer, and you know, me or others would offer, like, very fact-based scrutiny of a vote someone took. And then they'll come out and like, oh, woe is me, I'm getting death threats. And that is their tool and their tactic to try to get the media to back away, because they want to guilt the media and say, well, you just reporting on this, you're stirring the pot, you're responsible for the death threats that are coming my way. And I just reject that. I reject that. You know, it is the job of the media to hold politicians and public servants like this judge accountable for the decisions that they make. And just by virtue of us exposing decisions that you made publicly to viewers or listeners or readers does not mean we're responsible for what some unhinged person might write to in an email. And so that's the tactic there. The question is David Rose going to fall for it, right? No, we know David Rose better than that. David Rose is not falling for it because he also understands that this judge, a public servant, has a troubling history of soft on crime, soft on criminal rulings, and he knows that it's his duty to report on it, and he's not going to be guilted into shutting up.
Let's talk about those previous decisions. Back in July, we told you Judge Bender set bail at $50,000 for the man accused of shooting a grandmother multiple times at an ATM right in front of her granddaughter. The woman, who only wanted to be called Tina, was outraged with the decision.
I should have the right to have the peace of mind knowing that they're locked up, and I don't have that. I can guarantee you my medical bills far exceed that amount of money.
Then, in February, the accused accomplice in a double murder had his bail dropped by Judge Bender from $1 million to $20,000. Joshua Jones was accused of dumping the bodies of Robert Riley and Ashley Williams in Maple Valley. When Williams' family found out about Judge Bender's decision, they were furious.
Nobody is safe, you know, if he's out. And $20,000 bail is not good enough to protect people.
That's insane. Good for David. That's insane. You know, not to be, oh, guilted into, well, I don't want to point out what this judge did, because from the bench, she complained about media coverage. The only thing, David is articulating facts. Here's the case. Here's what the person is charged with. Here's what they're accused of doing. Here's what the judge set the bail at. He's not stirring the pot. He's not stirring up outrage. He's given the victims a voice, because apparently this particular judge and way too many others don't care what victims have to say, don't care what victims' families have to say. And as was very evident by the way she spoke to the suspect's family, her empathy lies with the criminals. Her empathy lies with the criminals. And she's not up there doing things in a fair, in an impartial way. She is doing things that favor the criminals, with seemingly little regard for victims of crime. I mean, $20,000 for the guy who's disposing bodies in a double homicide? That's wild stuff. And look, if unhinged people, it's never okay to make death threats. It's never okay to make death threats against anyone, let alone a judge, a public official, a politician. And we would never speak as if it is. But I'm not responsible for how people react to your bad decisions. David Rose isn't responsible for how people react to your bad decisions. It's not stirring the pot to point out things that a public servant did that put the community at risk. And shame on you for suggesting it is. Yet another activist judge who does not deserve the robe she's wearing. Wild stuff. Great job, David Rose. That is such a good story. insane. All right, on the public safety front, so we had Mike Solon, the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, on Sundays with subscribers this past Sunday. Highly recommend you check it out. Great interview. We touched on a few things because last week there were a lot of news stories related to the Seattle Police Department. Of course, there are 700 officers down. They're being bribed with like $50,000 signing bonuses, et cetera, because things have gotten so severe. But then there was the other story that is still floating in mystery land, and that's Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell's alleged support for a socialist police abolitionist named Sean Scott, who's running for state house in the district representing Seattle, who says he has the support of Mayor Harrell, and Mayor Harrell won't confirm or deny.
We're happy to have the support of the actual 43rd Legislative District Democrats. Proud to be supported in this race as well by Planned Parenthood, by the Washington State Council of Firefighters, and actually by the mayor of Seattle as well.
Sean Scott says you endorsed him for a state legislature run.
Come on now.
I just wanted to ask.
You're recording right now, right?
Yeah, but is it a yes or a no?
I'm not going to answer anything right now.
Insane. So really, and we've still never gotten a response from the mayor's office, multiple text messages to his staff, multiple emails to his office saying, can you just tell us yes or no? This is a very weird situation. And so when he doesn't say no, I honestly take that as a yes. But I had to ask Mike Solon about it because it's got a sting for officers. Like, here the city's acting like it's very supportive, wants to increase the number of officers, wants to be supportive of SPD after these years of vilification. Mayor Bruce Harrell says he's a public safety mayor. You can't be a public safety mayor and support a police abolitionist. not just any police abolitionist. Because, frankly, I'm a police abolitionist. If you look at it in the very, like, you know, high level, Nicole's like, where are you getting at, Brandy? High level. Yeah, if we lived in a freaking utopia where we didn't need the police, I would totally be in favor of abolishing the police and divesting money from the police department into other things. We don't live in that utopia. We probably never will live in that utopia. But Sean Scott doesn't care. He wants to abolish the police anyway. He supported the riots. He supports acts of criminal civil unrest, etc. So you can't be the public safety mayor and support Sean Scott. So I had to ask Mike Solon whether he knew what was going on here or what was going on in Mayor Harrell's mind.
Politically, if you're Bruce Harrell, your soft support, if you will, if that's mm-hmm. the way we want to use to describe this, puts Bruce in a good political spot because you keep the far left activists in play to do your bidding, whatever you need to get done to appease them. But then the deal is, hey, don't be so loud on other things. It's a political soft support, in my view, that benefits Bruce to not publicly say, hey, I am supporting him, or publicly say and not supporting him. You just stay neutral on it. And then hopefully the media doesn't spotlight this and you can remain clean. But I like mm-hmm. your tenacity because you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. So, and I think more so, it's yes, it's equally important to draw attention to why Bruce's office hasn't commented on this. That's strategic. The second piece is, why hasn't the media really dug into this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was a citizen who taped Tim Burgess, the deputy mayor, and he said, no, Bruce has not taken a position in that race. And he was very definitive. But again, if that's the case, we've reached out plenty of times. But all of that in the backdrop of that has to sting for police officers. Even if it's not true for Bruce not to be willing to come out and say, no, I'm not supporting the police abolitionist.
It does. We've had the continued conversation here and everything points back to the last 4 years, 2020.
Yeah.
The riots, the assaults, the amount of officers that had to leave the career based upon career-ending injuries because of those riots. The lack of political support, the complete throwing under the bus of police officers by our elected leaders, the corruption of losing the East Precinct, the text message saga between then Mayor Jenny Durkan and Chief Carmen Best. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And then you have this individual, Sean Scott, who supported the abolition of policing. Full out Marxist and one that loudly supported the defund nonsense. So to your point, it does sting. For those that remained here, you see that your elected executive who claims publicly that he's the public safety guy, but at the same time, reportedly soft supporting a police abolitionist for political representation in Olympia, it's like the game continues.
Yeah, and it's a game that's played at the expense of police officers, their lives, their careers, the safety of the citizens of Seattle, and it's disgusting. And look, you know, one of the things I would say to Bruce Harrell is own your decisions. Own your decisions. Be a man. Own your decisions. Be a leader. You've always talked about the importance of leadership and transparency and honesty, and you're going to be a different mayor and all these things. If you support Sean Scott, own your decision. Come out. Explain why. Explain to the men and women of the Seattle Police Department why you're supporting a police abolitionist. Explain to the citizens of Seattle, particularly in the downtown core, in South Seattle, on Capitol Hill, why you're supporting a police abolitionist at a time when they're dealing with unprecedented crime. So be a leader. Be the leader that you pretend to be. Come out, respond to our emails, respond to our text messages. Own your decision. Now, I won't agree with the decision because I think I know what it is, but it's even more cowardly not to come out and own it. So I do want to play one more clip from our interview with Mike Solon. So really, one of the reasons we wanted to have him in is I'd been pretty hard on the, I think that's fair to say, on the Washington State Patrol Troopers Union for not taking a position in the governor's race. And I stand by that. I stand by my criticism of them. I know that they're trying to do what they think is best for the troopers out on the road by not taking a position because they probably think Bob Ferguson's going to win, and then they have to work directly for him. They're the only law enforcement agency in the state that will. And Bob is known for being very, very vindictive. And so, you know, if you're relying on him to help with, you know, raises or contracts and all that stuff, like that's a decision they made. I just think too much is at risk to not take a position in a race where on the public safety front, and when it comes to support for law enforcement, the decision is very, very clear. But the Seattle Police Officers Guild did not stay out of the race. In fact, they issued a scathing anti-endorsement of Bob Ferguson, saying he'd be a public safety disaster, offering their full-throated endorsement of Dave Brikert for governor. And I talked to Mike Solon about why he felt like they wanted to do that, despite the fact that Bob Ferguson is known to, you know, keep a black book, so to speak, and come back and seek retribution. Here's what he said.
They could just target you just like they did the Pierce County Sheriff or the three Tacoma officers.
Or Tim Eyman.
Or Tim Eyman, right? It's like pick and choose. And so at the end of the day, cops just want to do the right thing. That's why we come into this profession, because we believe in helping the community. When you have somebody who acts nefarious because you went against them, that tells me that they're false, that they're insecure, and they're driven by ideology. At the end of the day, it's not based in reason or common sense, and it's evil.
Yeah.
And this is a fight with good and evil. And if we want to save what's left of this state, and I love this state. I mean, I love the city of Seattle. I always say this. I'm so thankful that the city gave me a chance. They gave me a life to raise a family and enjoy this wonderful climate and area. It's awesome. I've made lifelong friends. And I credit the people that hired me.
Yeah. But you're not saying goodbye, are you?
No.
Okay.
I've been around 25 years. Okay. I don't have much left.
All right.
But,
it sounded like a
good
goodbye.
You know, I'm sorry. I'm just getting a little bit of emotional because I believe in it still. Yeah. They haven't removed my care yet. I don't want to swear on your podcast. But
you can.
I won't. But screw these people. You know, screw you for doing this to this great state and our profession. You've done it under false pretenses, a false narrative. You've targeted police officers under a false narrative. You are corrupt and you're evil. And I will do everything I can under the authority that I have and the position that I occupy right now to call you out. And regardless of their faux threats. So bring it.
You and me both.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Truer words
I mean
have never
that.
Been spoken.
Yeah, he is a public safety disaster.
Yeah.
And I saw him actually, had to have been 3 weeks ago. He was in Columbia Tower and I thought about going up to him, but he was in a conversation. I wanted to be respectful. But I keep on replaying that in my mind. I should have gone up to him and introduced myself, and I should have said, I hope you lose.
I wish he would have. Mike Solon, president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, with what I'll say was a very emotional kind of raw interview. I've interviewed him many, many times. I've never quite seen him in that form. He's obviously very worried, as am I. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be doing everything we're doing outside of the show, politically speaking, if we weren't incredibly worried about the outcome in November. There's so much at stake. It just continues to, every time I see Bob Ferguson come on TV and suggest he cares about public safety, it literally makes me sick to my stomach, because it's just, it's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. And Mike Solon, you know, usually I told him during the interview, I don't like calling someone evil, but the man is evil. I don't know any other way to put it. I hate to say that. It's like, that's not, it doesn't feel like who I am, but the lies at the expense of the people he's supposed to serve, the vindictiveness, all of it, it's horrible, horrible stuff. So you can check out that interview with Mike Solon, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. All right, we're going to move on. If you're thinking about selling your home this year, do what so many of our Undivided viewers and listeners have done. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He and his team have an innovative marketing strategy. I mean, they are going to make your listing shine so it stands out in the crowd. That was the case for Mike Boggs, retired Seattle police officer who got out of the craziness to move to Arizona. And he was just so happy with how fast Wes was able to sell his home.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price we want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. And he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm particularly happy when we get positive success stories of people who use Wes to sell their home when it's someone like Mike who deserves it. Spent 30 years serving the citizens of Seattle, deserves that retirement in Arizona. I'm glad that Wes Jones could help him get there. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. It didn't take very long for citizens in Spokane who supported the new mayor, Lisa Brown, to be very disappointed with the new mayor, Lisa Brown. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, there are some billboards popping up in the city of Spokane. I didn't see them when I was over there, but maybe they just went up in the last few days. So look, you know, not uncommon for citizens to have complaints about politicians, but these billboards are pretty interesting. So it says, Mayor Brown, you promised something different than the Woodward administration, the former mayor, of course, who was a Republican who Brown defeated. What is different? Engagement? Transparency? Are our unhoused friends better off? Are our downtown businesses better off? So, okay, you could look at that and say, well, you know, maybe that's some Republicans paying for a billboard or whatever it is, ranting against Mayor Brown. Actually, the billboards were paid for by a supporter of hers. Someone who not only supported her campaign for mayor, but someone who actually donated to her campaign for mayor and is now so disappointed that she hasn't made good on what she promised, specifically around the homelessness issue, that he's literally paying to put billboards up around town. This is from our friends at the Center Square. Billboards started to pop up around Spokane on Monday, calling out Mayor Lisa Brown over the spiraling state of homelessness, and her supporters paid for them. According to the billboards, the effort was paid for by concerned citizens and organized by H.T. Higgins, a former teacher at Gonzaga Preparatory School, who donated $1,200 to Brown's 2023 mayoral campaign. Last week, he held a protest outside City Hall sporting a similar message. The protest and now the billboards follow the apparent lack of an emergency shelter plan ahead of this winter. Local law requires Spokane to open warming and cooling centers when temperatures pass a certain threshold and publish its plan for doing so each year by September 30th. And the mayor's office did not do that. And there's a lot happening over there. And there's a lot of history here. But I think this is just a good example of, like, look, you can't, the people who created these problems are not going to be the people to fix them. And that's not a political statement. That's just true. If someone over a long period of time helped create a crisis, why all of a sudden would they be the ones that you would trust to fix it? Now, I kind of think that this supporter should have known that if their key issue was homelessness. And, you know, Mayor Brown was the head of the Commerce Department, which was tasked with dealing with homeless encampments that were popping up on state property. Remember Camp Hope? It was at the time in Spokane, the largest homeless encampment in the entire state was in Spokane, not Seattle, Spokane. And that boondoggle was directly attributable to the Department of Commerce that was run at the time by Lisa Brown. So it kind of like, it just defied common sense that people in Spokane would choose Lisa Brown to confront their most pressing issues like homelessness when Camp Hope under her leadership at Commerce was such a disaster. And there's a couple things happening leading up to the cooler weather, right? So they were supposed to by September 30th, the city released this plan to say, here's how we're going to basically house homeless people when it gets frigid outside. They haven't done it. They haven't made good on transparency. She promised more transparency when she was running for mayor. Even her supporters now recognize she hasn't delivered on transparency. And then at the same time, the city's largest, according to Center Square, the city's largest congregate shelter, the Trent Resource and Assistance Center, is closing at the end of this month. So that will take hundreds of beds offline right before winter, when the city has this obligation to explain to people and be transparent about how it's going to house all these individuals when the temperatures like get sub-zero. So this is not a surprise. Like, she was just elected mayor in 2023. She's very new to the job, and it has taken less than a year for people who once supported her to realize that she sold them a bill of goods that she's just not interested in making good on. And again, it's not a political assessment that I'm making. It's based on what she did in previous positions, the failure to deal with the homeless crisis in a meaningful way in previous positions, and then somehow being elected by citizens of a city that were dealing with homelessness and an increase in homelessness, and like this weird expectation that she'd do better than she did before. And clearly she's not going to, and she hasn't. It only took a year to figure that out. So I just... like, it's instances like this where I don't necessarily feel bad for the citizens of Spokane. I mean, there's a lot of people there who didn't vote for this that are now dealing with it. But how many, I'm worried for Spokane. How many stories have we done recently on the show that have to do with Spokane going the way of Seattle? We had the restaurant owner, the chef, Chef Chad White on the show, who really comes across as a very apolitical person. He's like, I just want to cook food, man. But he had to close this restaurant, like celebrated chef, celebrity chef, had to close a restaurant, or is closing a restaurant in Spokane because, you know, he'd open the door and tinfoil would fly in off the street. You know, there's people using drugs and stuff outside, and he couldn't run a business that way. The foot traffic was down because downtown Spokane, I mean, I was there, what, a couple weeks ago? It's not nice down there. I went driving around. There's some areas that are cute. Like, I think they've done a good job at keeping up Waterfront Park. I mean, if that were in Seattle, I think it would be filled with tents. But I was looking for like a cute shopping kind of area, right? Because I had some time to kill between two events. And I drove all around, and like, I found no area besides a literal mall that's down there. I can't remember the name of the mall. It's like, you know, part of it's on the street, but the rest is just a mall. But that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for like small local businesses, boutiques, things I could go support. There was no area in that downtown where I felt like I could park my car and get out, or that I even wanted to. And that's really sad. And so you're seeing Spokane deteriorate, and then, but they're going the wrong direction. They're like turning to people who've made these problems worse in Seattle. You know, they're turning to policies that have made Seattle worse. And I just want to shake the collective city and say, don't do this to yourselves. Like, we've already experimented with this. San Francisco experimented in this way. Portland experimented in this way. Seattle's experimented in this way with this kind of leadership, this kind of failed approach to dealing with homelessness, lack of transparency, etc. So you can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. And Mayor Lisa Brown might have been a new mayor, but she's the same old. She represents the same old way of doing things. All right, that segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. I have talked to you guys about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. So it's actually, I mean, this time of year is right when I started the program. So I lost, it was 2 years ago, almost 30 pounds between Halloween and Christmas. Think about that. Between Halloween and Christmas, in arguably the most difficult time of year to start some sort of new weight loss journey. But I did it. I committed. They tell you exactly what to do every day for 60 days, which was easy for me because there was a lot of structure there. And it was difficult. Don't get me wrong. It's not some like magic trick, drugs, injections, something that's like a quick fix. It was difficult. I really had to commit to it. But the weight comes off so quickly that you're like, hell yeah, I can do this. And then at the end of 60 days, you can decide to do some more rounds of the program. Or if you're happy with where you're at, you just make some simple lifestyle changes to be able to keep the weight off for life. And I've heard so many success stories. In fact, one of my friends and his wife, I think they lost lost, both of them are down more than 50 pounds each. And they also started the program this time last year. So it can be done. It can be done. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with our friend Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. And by the way, you can do that whole program virtually. You actually don't have to go into an office anywhere. So you could do it in from Timbuktu if you wanted to. Where were the pictures of from the Como News article where they were talking about pollution in Washington State and they were using pictures of pollution? Poland. You could do it from Poland if you wanted to. If you're breathing in that smog in Poland, you might as well do it feeling good about yourself. So schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. Love it. I saw another company popping up, you know, like literally trying to use the same messaging as Eastside Weight Loss. And I'm like, losers. You see, because you see how good this is going. So many success stories are like, we got to get in on that. I'm not going to be a spokesperson for you. Thieves of ideas. You haven't seen that?
I haven't seen that one yet. I saw a commercial
from the other day. I was like, wow, all of what you're saying sounds very similar. Thieves. No, I don't. It's fine. I haven't asked Dr. Coogan about it.
Like, I know. You might, maybe it's his secondary company and you're in trouble now. Right?
No. You know, I don't think before I speak.
It's a branch.
It's fun. Yeah, it's a branch. Oh, anyway. Okay, what are we doing now? Oh, we're going to do Unbelievable. Let's talk about cities being bought and paid for and selling out their constituents. All right. So we know the Climate Commitment Act is all about money. That's all this is. You guys, that's all it is. It's about money in the pockets of municipalities, of counties. They can do all the things they want to do. Remember how they like, this is kind of what this reminds me of. Like Bob Ferguson, when he was on the King County Council and now he's running for governor and he brags that he balanced the budget. That they, oh, we, you know how we balance the budget, because of course he acts like a moderate and like he can work across the aisle, which he can't, of course. Oh, you know what we did? We took Democrats and Republicans and we locked ourselves in a room and we didn't leave until the budget was balanced. But he doesn't mention that during that time they also approved $1 billion in new taxes. Yeah, any family could balance their budget if they had an unlimited teat to suckle from taxpayers. If you had an unlimited income stream, you too could balance your budget. So it's just ridiculous. But all the Climate Commitment Act is about greed. We already know that there is no measurement for how it might improve the environment. Some of the things it goes to pay for actually don't do anything. And this is the admission of some Democratic lawmakers to directly impact the environment. Things like air quality monitoring, as if we don't get that on our cell phones. And then, you know, the research that has been done that we've discussed on this show says that even if Washington State meets all its current climate goals, which are completely unrealistic anyway, some of them aren't feasible because we just don't have the infrastructure and never will to be able to achieve them, that it would lower the global temperature like 0.03%. So, which is like well within the margin of error for a thermometer. So it's all nonsense. It's all about money. Money into government coffers, money out of government coffers, into the pockets of their political allies and cronies. And I know that makes me sound like an uber libertarian. Fine. So we talked for the show last week about how all these municipalities all of a sudden are voting on whether to take a position against Initiative 2117. So I-2117 will eliminate the carbon auctions and thus eliminate the Climate Commitment Act, which has raised gas prices, right? So we saw all these cities. And did you find out, did Bellingham just do it too? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Seattle, Bellingham. I mean, there's, you name it. A bunch of cities took a city councils took an actual vote to on the record say they are opposed to Initiative 2117, which I find to be an incredibly irresponsible and corrupt use of taxpayer time and resources. You know, usually those two things aren't supposed to mix, like official business and campaign business. And so when I first started hearing about this, you know, when Olympia did it, it was like on the front page of the Olympian, or maybe it was one of those cities down by Olympia. And I thought, how can that even be allowed? Well, apparently there's this little carve out in state law that allows, you know, jurisdictions to take a position on a ballot initiative if it directly impacts their funding. So that's what they did, right? So the first city, we had a viewer who kind of tipped us off like, hey, the city of Issaquah is doing this. Is this normal? And that's when we started looking into this. And that's when almost simultaneously, after we heard about the Issaquah thing, all these other cities started to do it. And it seemed, I think I even said it on the show, it seemed very coordinated, right? For them to all come out and take this stand against Initiative 2117. And I said at the time, it's all about money. We finally, after like a week and a half, got an email back from the city of Issaquah, the city council president, Lindsay Walsh. Nicole had asked, this was back, gosh, this was before they had a public hearing to express their opposition. And Nicole had asked, does the council believe it's appropriate or common for taxpayer resources to be utilized for taking a position on a ballot initiative? So we finally heard back. Again, Issaquah City Council President Lindsay Walsh said, the Issaquah City Council was advised, per RCW, we could consider a resolution supporting or opposing a ballot proposition, provided we give approximately equal opportunity to each side to express their opinions, and the presentation we receive from city staff is an objective and fair presentation of the facts. That line again. The Issaquah City Council was advised per RCW. She goes on to say, part of the presentation of facts was the funding the city of Issaquah has secured or is pending from the Climate Commitment Act. You can find that list here. All right, let's go through the list here. So we knew it was about money, right? These cities have been promised money from the CCA, from money from you that you're paying at the pump. That's what they're, don't forget, that's where that money's coming from. Now, technically, the polluters who had to buy these carbon credits, they're actually paying into this program, but they're passing the cost along to you. So you're paying for this stuff. So this is all about bribery, right? So let's see. There were two tables they provided us with. One are this first one, City of Issaquah secured grants funded through the Climate Commitment Act. All grants listed below are fully or partially funded through the CCA. So let's see here. There is $150,000 for Energy Smart East Side, which helps with low and moderate income clean energy installations. $100,000 for solar plus storage design, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of it's for this EV charging, $60,000 for their fleet. So to the tune of $1.2 million in CCA money already guaranteed or even fully funded to the city of Issaquah. Now, what I would say about that, that money's not going away then. That money's not going away. If it's already been, if they've already doled that money out or promised that funding, it's for funds they already received into the government coffers through the CCA. So they're not going to turn around and take it away. They've already given it to you. Just like the government isn't going to refund, you know, all these polluters the money that they paid for carbon credits. No, that money is the government's money. They're already spending it. They're not going to turn around and take all this money from the city of Issaquah. So that's irrelevant. That argument that you've got this funding from the CCA, this $1.2 million, is irrelevant because you're going to keep it. That's the argument that I made when they came out and said, hey, we're giving these energy credits of $200. And Inslee said, and people who support the repeal want to take these energy credits away. No, because you already have the money to pay them out. So it's not like if the CCA is repealed in November, the government's going to come back to you and say, we want that $200 credit back. No, they already gave it to you. It's already money that the government had. So it's just a misnomer. So the other one is they say that there's pending grants with CCA or partial CCA funding. So $2.4 million in pending grants that is either full or in part funded by the CCA. So the city of Issaquah, this is about money for them. But, you know, one of the things that I would note is all the things they list here, right? So $1.88 million for charger installations at Tibbetts Valley Park, $334,000 for energy efficiency upgrades. All this stuff has to do with, like, issues and ideas that are pushed through the CCA. So clean energy, whatever it is. These aren't necessities. None of the things on this list are necessities. The city of Issaquah got this money and they're like, oh, we love this. We got money to do things with, and they want to keep it at the expense of their constituents, at the expense of working class families. Like, what is more important for a taxpaying resident of the city of Issaquah? Being able to afford to put gas in their car or being able to plug their Tesla in while they're visiting Tibbetts Valley Park? Nicole, what do you think is more critical for the government to make sure that a working class family can put gasoline in their car mm-hmm. to get to and from work, or that someone with a Tesla can plug it in while they're walking their dog at the park?
Wow.
Just in case I Am I being unreasonable here?
I'm going to go for option number one.
Option number one, yeah. So you're willing to support this completely unnecessary policy, all this unnecessary spending at the expense of people who are actually struggling for real needs they have, not to mention the fact that the CCA, since it increases gas prices, it increases the price of food. You'd rather have a resident of your city, likely upper middle class, be able to plug their Tesla in at a park than a working class family be able to afford to put gas in their car and food on their table. Good for you, City of Issaquah. Really well done. Unbelievable. All right. Do you have it in you, Nicole, for another round of unbelievable? Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. The attacks on Brian Haywood just continue. And they're so unhinged and they're so transparent. This idea that Brian Haywood bought his way onto the ballot is insane. Did he fund the initiatives? Yes. But he wasn't able to buy 1.5 or so million signatures. They had to go out and make the case to people. And they did make the case, very successfully so, from voters right, left, and center. In fact, more voters who are considered Democrats and independents signed these initiatives than Republicans. But let's just forget about the will of voters. This is all about one rich man buying his way onto the ballot. So there's a new David Horsey cartoon in the Seattle Times. It's just stupid. So it's got Brian Haywood. Look at him. I like that they put him in his. That is a Brian Haywood outfit. I gotta say. It is. I like that.
Brian was very offended by his belly, though. He's like, I look like I'm pregnant with twins.
With twins. So he's pushing this shopping cart with loads of bags of money, and it says, repeal capital gains, save natural gas, kill the Climate Commitment Act, dump Wall Cares. And he says, I bought these four initiatives with my own millions. Now the rest of you can sort out the consequences. So again, this is such a tired, tired line of attack on Brian Haywood that this was purely a result of one rich man's desires and whims, completely ignoring like the will of the people and the hard work and the enthusiasm for the initiatives that allowed them to get on the ballot. But also, he is far from the only rich person in this game. And he's not even close to the side that has spent the most money on this. The no on the initiative side has far outfundraised Brian Haywood, has spent far more money than Brian Haywood has. And again, I mean, we've talked about this quite a few times, but Let's Go Washington in its entirety has raised $8 million. That's great. $8 million is pretty good. But it pales in comparison to what the opponents of the initiatives have raised. They have individual PACs against all four of the initiatives. Just the No on 2117 campaign, so that's just the campaign opposing the initiative to repeal the CCA. They've brought in $14.5 million. So more than double all of the money raised by Let's Go Washington for just the PAC opposing 2117. And, why don't you have Steve and Connie Ballmer pushing a grocery cart full of money? Because they gave $2.5 million. Why don't you have Chris Stolte pulling a grocery cart full of money? Because he gave $1 million. Bill Gates, $1 million. SEIU, $1 million. And it just goes to show, like in the eyes of the media, rich people who align with them politically are just fine. They're not buying anything. They're not buying votes. They're not trying to influence an election with their wealth. They're doing the right thing. But Brian Haywood, despite the fact he has 1.5 million voters on his side, he's evil. He's nothing more than a hedge fund multimillionaire who wants to screw over Washingtonians. Doesn't get more transparent than that. Seattle Times, again, I'll say it again, biggest disappointment of the 2024 election cycle, Seattle Times and the Seattle Times editorial board. It's really quite unbelievable. I don't know how anyone could take them seriously after this. All right. The insurance industry is crazy right now. It really is. You could have one small claim and get dropped like that, and what are you going to do? Go out and hope you can find another insurance company to take you? What you need to do is get Firstmark Insurance. Firstmark Insurance is a local broker. I've been doing this for a long time. They have something called the Firstmark Challenge, and it'll tell you whether they're right for you or not. Basically, they'll go over your current insurance for free. They'll talk to you about your insurance needs. Then they'll go out and they'll shop the market for you, and they'll bring back what they think is the best solution, you know, for the best price, to make sure you have the coverage you need. For a lot of people, they end up having coverage, paying for coverage that they didn't even need in the first place. So Firstmark can help you sort that out as well. There's a reason Mike and I are members of the Firstmark family. Personally, the business is also insured through Firstmark, is because it's just an exceptional product. And they do all of this work for you for free. So like, why would you do it on your own? I just don't get that. I don't get it. Why would you like sit there for hours on end trying to make sure you have the right insurance at the best price and you're all covered and make sense of all the insurance mumbo jumbo when you could literally just have Firstmark do it for you for free? And then handle it for free forever. You never pay Firstmark a dime for their services. You guys, it is really a no-brainer. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the Firstmark Challenge now. Be the next Firstmark Challenge victory. Again, it's free and they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, really quickly on the national news front, we have an update to a story that gave me goosebumps yesterday. And now it's killing my goosebumps. This is so devastating.
Squashing them.
Yeah. It's flattening my goosebumps. There you go. That's what I meant. My goosebumps are gone. All right. So we've been talking about this whole men competing against women nonsense. Biological men competing in athletics against women at any level makes no sense. I refuse to even entertain a conversation that it does. And we will be on the right side of this issue. It's just a matter of time. But there were women at in various college volleyball teams that were finally putting their foot down and saying, and coaches, and saying, we're not doing this. We're not competing against San Jose State. They've got this transgender player named Blair Fleming, who's like really good because Blair's a dude, like a biological boy. And you know, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. So there had been all these colleges, including the University of Nevada, who over the past month have decided that they're going to forfeit their games to San Jose State. And I read it yesterday. I'll just read it again because I thought this is the statement that gave me goosebumps because I thought this is how it's going to change. It's like, players, coaches, parents standing up for themselves and just putting their foot down. It said, we, the University of Nevada, Reno women's volleyball team, forfeit against San Jose State University and stand united in solidarity with the volleyball teams of Southern Utah University, Boise State University, the University of Wyoming, and Utah State. We demand that our right to safety and fair competition on the court be upheld. We refuse to participate in any match that advances injustice against female athletes. And I still think that is such an awesome position for them to take. I am just incredibly disappointed that the University of Nevada, Reno, is not standing behind its female student athletes. They released a statement after their team forfeited this match saying, on October 13th, the majority of members of the University of Nevada, Reno women's volleyball team sent a statement to the university advising the institution that they were forfeiting its scheduled match with San Jose State University. The players' decision and statement were made independently and without consultation with the university or the athletic department. The players' decision also does not represent the position of the university. The university and its athletic programs are governed by the Nevada Constitution and Nevada law, which strictly protect equality of rights under the law, and that equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged by the state or any of its subdivisions on account of race, color, creed, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, age, disability, ancestry, or national origin. The university is also governed by federal law, as well as the rules and regulations of the NCAA and the Mountain West Conference, which include providing competition in an inclusive and supportive environment, my ass. The university intends to move forward with the match as scheduled, and the players may choose not to participate in the match on the day of the contest. No players will be subject to any team disciplinary action for their decision not to participate in the match. Now, I'm glad to hear that they're not going to be disciplined if they decide not to participate in the match, which I think is coming up October 26th. But this was an opportunity for a university to stand on its own and say, look, we are governed by NCAA, we're governed by the Mountain West, we're governed by state law, but that state law is wrong. The NCAA is wrong. The Mountain West Division is wrong. And we will accept the consequences for saying so and for refusing to play this game and standing by our players who are refusing to participate. And I understand that might open them up to some sort of legal jeopardy, but that's what needs to happen here. I mean, how insane is that? Reading some of those lines, oh, we're governed by the Nevada Constitution, which strictly protects equality of rights under the law. And it's like, okay, but what about the equality of rights for the women who are playing on those teams who are clearly disadvantaged? What about the women? What about the girls? Why is no one standing up for them? Very few, I shouldn't say no one. Why is it so hard to understand that concept that you're saying this is about equality, right? And inclusion, but it's excluding women, biological women. It's hurting biological women, but that's okay. They just have to tolerate it. They can't speak up for themselves. So you're going to defend the very few transgender athletes at the expense of the many, many female athletes who are supposed to be protected under Title IX, because you've manipulated Title IX to fit your political agenda. But that, what was the other, the university is governed by federal law as well as the rules and regulations of the NCAA and the conference, which include providing competition in an inclusive and supportive environment. Again, what is supportive about this environment? Clearly, the female players who said they're not playing don't feel supported. And not just the female players from your college, from Southern Utah, Boise State, University of Wyoming, Utah State. They all clearly don't feel supported. They all clearly don't feel included. They all clearly don't feel like this is about equality. So what about them? What about them? Again, we will be on the right side of this. And so I'm not playing this game anymore. I think for a long time, I was never in on this. But I played along with sort of the transgender game and like, I'll say they, them if they want or whatever it is. And it's like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I mean, I respect the decision of an adult who's just living their life to live their life. I'm always going to respect that as long as it doesn't come at the expense or hurt other people. And so that's where you have to draw a line, right? And there are so many instances of that line just being completely erased in the name of making someone feel good. And I'm sorry, like I just can't prioritize someone's feelings above reality, above sanity. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And if that makes me a bad person, fine. All right. Coming up next, our daily show poll, questions, comments, and our closing sanity check from Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton making a little flurry on social media today. First, obviously, I know you guys are in tune with what's happening politically, locally, nationally, around the world, because you're watching the show. And I think you got to be a little bit of a political nerd to watch this show or listen to this show. The question is the person managing your retirement portfolio as in tune as you are? If the answer is no, you should probably find someone else, because especially if you're getting close to retirement, you know, you need to make sure that it's protected, that you're not exposing your hard-earned retirement to unnecessary risk. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, along with Bulwark's analysts, they track current events closely so they can adjust to market risks every single day to shield your portfolio as much as possible. Risk management is Bulwark's number one focus because you only get one retirement. And you deserve to have the retirement that you worked hard for and planned for. So learn about Bulwark's risk management strategy in their free Common Sense Investing Guide. Get yours now by going to knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, getting into our daily subscriber show poll. There's going to be a lot of polls about the election. I'm trying to gauge sort of where you guys are at with things heading into November. You never have to tell me who you're voting for, of course. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, will you be a straight party line voter in November? Pretty simple question, yes or no. For some people, it's maybe not an option unless you leave races blank because you might be, for instance, a Republican voter and there's a race that only has Democrats. And like I told you, don't sit those out. Figure out who the most sane Democrat is. On Patreon, 38% of you saying yes, you'll be a straight party line voter. 61% of you saying no. Jason R., after years of research, I found a consistently reliable voting method. I look at the stranger's recommendations and vote the opposite on everything. That is a very reliable voting method. That is so sound. Let me see here. Sand says, of course, I'll be voting for Democrats when no Republican is on the ballot. I mean, honestly, there's at least two races where I'm voting for a Democrat instead of a Republican, despite there being a Republican option. And I'll be releasing some of my endorsements or suggestions in the days ahead in case they're not already clear. Randall Everson says, every so often in super rare cases, the Democrat is the better choice. Yeah, we try to be honest about who's the better person and vote for them. Usually that's a Republican, but not always. That's about how I feel. There are some jobs where you just need someone who's qualified to do it, where it's not really inherently a partisan position where they can have influence on policy, and you just need the person who's better qualified to do the actual work. Let me see. Mike H. says, I never set out to vote straight party line. It's just that other than the 2016 presidential race, when I voted third party, Brian Sontag was the last Democrat I wanted to vote for. Yeah, sometimes it just happens that way. Those are the people you're just aligned with, and there aren't an awful lot of exceptions to that. Let's see over on Locals what's poppin'. Similar kind of response on Locals, pretty split. 57% say you're not going to vote straight party line. Weisscastle says, no, but so far I haven't found a Democrat on my ballot that I plan to vote for. Michelle says, no, and I never have been. Honestly, I try to vote based on candidate instead of party, but that generally leans right anyway. And one of the things I'll say, going back to Nicole, can we go way, way back up to the must-win seats? Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of those areas where I'd sort of say that to me, party doesn't matter. That I'm not, or party does matter, that the candidate doesn't matter. I hate to even say that, but it's like, and that's kind of how I feel in the governor's race, honestly. Like, we need balance. So in that race, like, if you're undecided, just pick the Republican just for the sake of balance. And in these races, I feel the same way. If you're like on the fence at all, who cares who the candidate is? Choose the Republican so you can stop Democrats from having a supermajority. So there are rare instances where it's not for me about the quality of the candidate. I really hate to say that because usually it is. But when you're talking about the possibility of a supermajority, then, man, like, that's a pretty big deal. And the candidate would have to be really, 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 really bad for me not to support the Republican candidate in those races. All right, let's get to some other questions and comments. Okay, Karen, so it's all about this judge. Her statements and views are beyond appalling. And what law is she now upholding? Yeah, this judge is nuts. I'm sure she'll be like, man, Brandy Cruz is leading me to get death threats. Don't death threat the judge. But I'd like to see the death threats. Whenever they say mm-hmm. that, I never believe it.
Is it true?
Correct. I never believe it. Whenever the city council said, I never believe it.
Right. I mean, sorry. I mean, the severity of it, it's kind of like maybe there's a comment that's right. like, that should happen to you, or like, yeah. you know, and some stupid like social media.
Right.
It's totally inappropriate, but I feel like it's more of, you know, social media troll like right. language. And yeah, I would like to see those like threats that are legit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Read the next comment.
Cameron Barth. A driver in Renton just killed a mom and three kids, and Judge Bender lowered the bail for the at-fault driver who was going 112 miles per hour in a 40.
Do you remember this? Yeah, this is the mom in the minivan. The mom.
That's the kid that was like a repeat offender.
Mm-hmm.
Bail had been set at $1 million. She lowered it to $100,000.
Yep, and he's still not in jail.
Wow. That was the kid who'd like been multiple times doing this like
insane,
like this is 112 and a 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then had totaled three cars. Yep. And we talked about it on the show because it's like, what parent buys you a new car?
And remember, some of them, his parents were there before police even showed up.
Wow.
One of them. Mm-hmm.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. Carol, just Carol. I like that their screen name is Carol, just Carol. I completely agree on a supermajority. It's not good. I might prefer we have numerous vigorous parties, but with just two, we need as much distribution of power as is possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Krista, poor me, poor murderer's family. What about the victim and their family? This is beyond disgusting. She's crying about death threats, but doesn't care about people who were actually killed. Yeah, just no self-awareness. No self-awareness. Like, whoa, are you? It's like, no, somebody's loved one is dead. They were stabbed to death with a butcher knife after being bludgeoned from behind.
And it's just bizarre the way she's speaking to the media in this, saying, I know you're going to cover this. You better cover it fair. Oh, we did. We covered it real fair.
Yeah. Insane. Brett Hammond.
It's crazy.
I live in Spokane. Just got ballots yesterday. Want to vote for good candidates for judges, etc., but no idea who to pick here. I need to figure out, because I don't know either. On the judge, I wouldn't know in the judges in Spokane, and I don't have the capacity to look at every single judicial race. There's a bajillion. Mm-hmm. So I need to figure out if there's a reliable organization that's endorsing the better option for judge. Let me make a few phone calls and look around. There's a few people.
We do have that organization that is working to help judge it.
Like, yeah, but they're apolitical and they don't give endorsements.
Got it.
So I don't think that that would work. Let me look into that, Brett. Will you make a... I need a follow-up on the show tomorrow. There's a few people I can ask to see if there's just sort of a clearinghouse for here's who you should vote for. The only one I've really looked into that I think for state Supreme Court, Dave Larson.
Yes.
So Dave Larson's state Supreme Court is a really big one. We need to make sure that he wins that seat. It's hilarious to me. Again, the Seattle Times... We should also look into this tomorrow. They released their full list of endorsements. I'm curious how many are Democrats versus Republican. It looked like almost all Democrats, except for a couple. But they endorsed this Sal Mungia guy against Dave Larson. He's never been a judge before. He's literally, you guys, he's never been a judge before. Like, yeah, he's practiced law, right? But they're pointing to these accomplishments, like head of like something with like his something with the Bar Association, whatever. He's never been a judge before, and he's running to be one of the most powerful judges in the state of Washington. Don't you think that if you're going to be a Supreme Court justice, that you should have, I don't know, been a judge at all?
Sometime.
And it just shows the absolute, like, hyper ideology of the Seattle Times drives me nuts. So Dave Larson for Supreme Court justice.
And I mean, look for endorsements from people you trust, but also read the language. I mean, there's usually little clues on how to vote for.
In the voter guide, if they say equity, no. If they say, like, I don't know, what other buzzword?
Yeah, diversity, equity, inclusion. Yeah.
But if they got equity anywhere in there.
But if there's any social issues, mentioned, it's about the law, not social issues. It's about the law and the
Constitution, yeah. So, yeah, read your voter guide, but let me look into that for you guys tomorrow, okay? We'll revisit it at the top of the show tomorrow. Let me see. Night Wolf, one rich man fighting a horde of rich men. That's rich, yeah. It's like the one rich man bad, all the much richer men trying to defeat the initiatives. Oh, they're fine. They're fine. No cartoons about them. Stupid.
It's really wild.
Yeah. Let me see here. Andy Stevens. I love that David Rose keeps showing the suspect's face. Yeah. I don't know if the judge granted the order
No, you could show the face. Like judge decided, no, you could show the face.
But. Yep. So it's like, oh, we don't want his face shown. Let's show it a million times.
I know. But every time he mentioned showing his face or whatever, Dave did show his face.
Yeah. Summer CS, $4.99 Super Chat. I missed yesterday's show. Thanks for going to Bothell. It's my kid's hometown, but we had to move because of schools. Wish I were still there to greet you. Yeah, Bothell was great. Although, man, hilly neighborhoods. Whew. We got our steps in, but it was like... And I was like, this is a workout.
How many houses do you think you hit? I didn't really talk to you Bothell, about that.
In Bothell, maybe 65. Like quite really? A few, yeah.
Gosh, see, I feel like it takes a while to talk to people, so it surprises me but you got to that
like
many.
Like half of those, they're not home. So you just put lit on the doorstep. And then usually it's a pretty quick conversation. Yeah. Like the one we had that was 20 minutes was really rare. Like I would say like 1 minute was like... You know,
really,
because a lot of people, they'll just say, you know, you have the ones where it's like, oh, I know who I'm voting for, or like, yeah, I'm not gonna tell you or whatever it is. And then some, it was just a quick, like, you can gauge their level of interest for standing there and talking to you. And I never want to be rude, so I'm not going to continue to like pepper them if they're clearly over it. But yeah.
Wow.
It's a mix between like 10 seconds to drop lit and 20 minutes to convince the guy with a Kamala Harris sign in his front window to vote for Dave Reichert. You know? All right, good comments per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? All right, former President Bill Clinton out on the campaign trail for Kamala Harris. Or is he?
You had a case in Georgia not very long ago, didn't you? They made an ad about a young woman who'd been killed by an immigrant. Yeah, well, if they'd all been properly vetted, that probably wouldn't have happened. But if they are properly vetted, and that doesn't happen.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We truly do. Every one of you. Even the trolls. I love it when trolls take time to watch the show. You know what else I love lately? Elon Musk, since he monetized X. All my haters make me money. So I'm like, yes, please. Like before I might mute you, but now I love it. Yes, please comment on my stuff.
Love it.
Thank you. I mean, it's only maybe a couple cents.
I knew Elon was going to be 2024's hero.
Well, hero to some, evil to others. Hero. It's like, you know, I know who he's going to leave behind when he creates a civilization on Mars. He'll be an all-Republican civilization for sure. Anyway, we'll see you guys back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. How does that sound? Support our show, $5 a month, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com.